Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight, multi-streaming tonight on both... there it is. It has started on Rumble. So, yes, we are live on Rumble and Odyssey because Odyssey has been bugging too much in the last few days. I'm worried that perhaps they may not have the personnel. I don't know. Maybe they're in financial trouble because of the SEC, because of the crash of Library. I don't know. But I've been realizing that Odyssey has not been delivering a stable streaming platform, and so we will be exploring different alternatives. Rumble. I've explored Twitter. I was not satisfied. Twitter doesn't have what it takes for a good live stream to happen yet. Rumble has been rising in popularity by hiring people, celebrities, e-celebs to do streams on their platform. And I've always been resistant to the idea of streaming on Rumble because I seem to understand that there is a fee to stream on Rumble. But at the same time, I'm in a free account and the option go live is there. But I don't know how it's going to work. Are there going to be limitations and they're going to want me to pay eventually? Or is there going to be bandwidth limitation? It's really not clear. I can't find the info. So I have no choice but to do test runs and see, can I stream for a whole week on Rumble? Can I stream for a whole month? When is it that whatever blockhead they do, when is it that is going to stem? Is it based on if I have too many viewers? Is it based if I cost too much bandwidth? How does it work? Because I see these options, professional plan, $100 per month, and you get 2 terabytes bandwidth. Bandwidth for what? Bandwidth for any video that's being watched? Because just the regular audience of about 1,000, 2,000 per video, just this is a lot of terabytes when you multiply, because it's a small audience, but it's an audience that watches the whole live, which is a couple of gigs. So I don't know. I have no idea. And the super chat, is it just cosmetic or is the super chat working? If someone is willing to volunteer on Rumble, don't send a big amount, but just try the super chat, because that's a big question also. The super chat of Odyssey system is wonderful. It is very generous. They don't take a cut at all, from what I understand. They take what's needed to minimally pay the transaction fee, and that's it. Rumble will probably take a bigger cut. Is that viable? Is that smaller than YouTube? The info out there is super hard to find, and so I have no choice but to try it. And at the same time, when I see yesterday, I couldn't do a show at all because I was not prepared to stream on Rumble, and Odyssey was totally bugged. The Streamlabs connection wasn't working, so we need an alternative at least, if not something that we will eventually switch to. And I see that some of our big audience members are in the Rumble chat. Spindly Opinion, DK Shadow, Speaker's Corner. Amazing to see you guys transferring. And if you want to keep watching on Odyssey, it's also a choice. I've not announced the Odyssey link at all. And for now, we have 60 viewers on Odyssey. We have 43 on Rumble. So still, Rumble is, it's not where my crowd is used to go. Cloud Warmer sends a super chat. He says, Jeff, just get 100 of us over there and you will be ready to go. Rumble launches free live streaming for creators. Free live streaming, but what, 100 of us, where do you take this? With over 100 subscribers. Ah, okay, so it's free, unlimited live streaming for content creators with over 100 subscribers. Well, I already have, I have 286 subscribers there. Because I had published a couple of episodes back then. And so, yes, that's probably why it says buy the pro plan, but at the same time I can stream for free. So we'll see how it plays out. We'll see how it all works. Trollwaffen says lol. Don Browning says I got a notification. Wonderful. The robot Britney Spears is getting better and better at imitating actual human movement. My God, I don't know what to say, because every time that she does crazy stuff like this on camera, the context on the community note says that those are not real knives. They do make noise like real knives, but she says, don't worry, they're not real knives. Okay, that's reassuring. I wouldn't want her to have knives available like this. But every time we talk of Britney Spears, it's this whole, should females be free? Like, because if you let them free, they're going to do some stupid stuff. It's like, yeah, that's what it is to be a female. Here you have a regular female who has just been reinforced all of her life to be wearing scantily dressed clothing and to be making movements of her body, and she's been programmed on this from her teenage years to adulthood, and it's all she does. And if you let her free, she's just going to keep doing it even when she's 80 years old. You know, it's not going to stop. You have created a monster. Oops, she did it again. And so you have people like Matt Walsh who say, remember when I told you that this woman is a psycho and should never have been released from her conservatorship? Well, the problem is, can psychos keep control of their own property? Or it seemed to me that we were in a liberal society and that even someone with different behaviors and different cognition could be welcomed in our society. So I find it sad if we start judging people and saying, oh, well, you're a psycho. You don't get to even decide what you do with your own money. You don't get access to your children. What has she done? This can be described as bizarre, as undesirable. You can judge her all you want, but you shouldn't be able to control her. I stand on the side of hashtag free Britney. You know, that is just what the female programming is, and some of them will just make these torturous movements with their body until they die. Let them do. Ex-CEO Linda Yaccarino is successfully censoring lawful but awful speech, interview reveals. The CEO of X, Linda Yaccarino, is once again plunged into a conversation surrounding the principles of free speech, shedding light on her standpoints, which seem to contain inconsistencies. Yaccarino, in her conversation with the Financial Times, appeared initially to champion the concept of free speech, only to subsequently divert the discussion towards other organizational aspects. It's always how our interviews turn out. She makes a explicit stated defense of free speech, but then she talks about all these things that where she intervenes and she plays with the free market of ID, which makes it not a free market of ID anymore. And that is the situation in which Elon finds himself. And today we had a live stream from Elon. Today we had a live stream from Elon, which is important. It gives us insight into the fact that we're not out of trouble in terms of contesting unfairly wavered Jewish power, in terms of questioning the representation of Jews in various industries, in terms of questioning the aggressiveness with which any sort of political opposition to projects of the Israeli state or the Jewish diaspora get kind of packed into a kind of pathological category of racism or very often anti-Semitism. We are still with this problem because Elon refuses to go out of the box on this. And what we find through this live stream is that Elon ultimately decided to, he thought it was a good strategy to counter the narrative of, well, your platform is anti-Semitic. Well, let's have the biggest Jew conversation of the year. Basically, let's gather everyone Jewish. Let's gather a bunch of rabbis who and Ben Shapiro, who you can't question, are fully Jewish. And let's get basically a Jewish approval that I'm not a Jew hater. That is what Elon has attempted to do. Now, there are problems with this. Because it gives credence to the people who attack you unfairly. See, Elon, when you do this, you're kind of leaving other people behind. The best thing you can do against a signal that is false is to ridicule it, to show how ridiculous it is, and to demonstrate by your actions that you don't care about it being applied to you. That is what I've been doing. That was my approach with the term anti-Semitism from the start of my public career. I think we need intellectuals with balls who say, all right, you can call me whatever you want. What you call me is on you. And I have made it a task of mine in all of these debates where I'm faced with leftist, extremist, far leftist, and Jews very often, who will try to attack me saying I'm anti-Semite. I will just stand, with a cold face, saying absolutely nothing. And in fact, never denying, never you will find a recording of me countering an attack of the kind, JF, you're anti-Semitic. You'll never see me answer and kneel and say, no, I'm not anti-Semitic. I had a girlfriend who's Jewish. I have a friend who's Jewish. I have this who's Jewish. Because when you do this, and this is basically what Elon has done in the most grandiose way you can do this, which is basically by convening a giga live stream on Twitter, a Twitter space, and convening this big meeting of rabbis and kneeling to them. And what you find yourself doing by doing this first is you give credence to the initial attack. When in fact, this should have been a problem that we address in society. For a long time, this term anti-Semitism has been abused. It's been abused. It's been unfairly used to create a false overlap between someone who criticizes the state of Israel or the Jewish political project in general, with someone who's sick, basically, someone who has a defect and someone who can only have reached these conclusions through a psychiatric deregulation of some kind. That is what the term anti-Semitism truly does in society. And you'll notice that in none other cases of racism do we have this equivalent, an equivalent to anti-Semitism. There are people who have tried to bring the term anti-whiteism, but it hasn't caught the public consciousness. And that's a problem because suppose that white people, they had a party, and they had a political party, and most of them would agree, yes, this is the great party for white people. And our project, let's say that the political project of this race in this fictitious world would be to, I don't know, give free sugar candy to all kids. And if there were a bunch of people who say, hey, we disagree, we think sugar candy is candied sugar is not healthy, we don't want to give it for free to all kids, we think it should be a personal decision of the parents, we oppose to the political party of white people. Let's say that this political party would be called the political party of white people. Would they be anti-white? And would you realize that there is a fair anti-white argument to make in that society? That the idea not being, I'm sick in the head and therefore I hate all white people, but the idea rather being, I object to candied sugar being given to all kids. And it just turns out that this idea is being pushed mostly by the political party for white people. Now, in that society, it would be unacceptable for any opposition to the candied sugar project to be associated with some sort of racism, or that if you oppose to candied sugar, you are sick in the head, you need pills, or you need to be imprisoned. Or in fact, if you deny the recipe for the candied sugar, you are committing a grave act of anti-whiteism. And if you deny access to that recipe, you will be found guilty in certain countries for denying an important historical event. That wouldn't make sense at all. It would be a sick society, a society that accuses you of basically either criminal things or of some sickness in the head because you object to a political project aimed at giving free candied sugar to children. The problem is we live in that society, in that sick society that is doing these acts of exaggeration. It's just not candied sugar that's at play. It's Judaism, and it's the Jews. An opposition to the projects of the Jews is very often confounded with racism against the Jews. An opposition to a political argument that the Jews seem to put forward, or put forward in greater numbers, is equated with a sickness, a hate inside. It's equated with a form of uncontrollable and irrational anger. Whereas there is actually, just like there was in the case of the candied sugar project, there is legitimate opposition to some of the ideas put forward by Jews in our society. And we need to have a discussion about them. And we can't even begin to have a discussion because there's this whole blurred space of political accusations in which, oh, well, if you side too much with the Palestinians, and this is something even Elon himself has done on the stream. Elon said today in front of rabbis, I believe that denying the right of Israel to exist is one of the worst forms of anti-Semitism I know of. So you couldn't be possibly of the opinion that, I don't know, historically, the Palestinian people or whoever was there had a more legitimate claim to this country than the Jews when they came later, without being an anti-Semite in the eye of Elon. You couldn't be of the opinion that the terrorist actions that are at the root of the birth of Israel, which is a form of political militancy, takeover of regions, purchasing of some regions, and committing of terrorist attacks against locals who were there, that this way in which the Jewish people has taken Israel is an illegitimate way, and it makes the whole thing illegitimate. The same way someone could think that the fact that Europeans have taken over Canada and the US from the Native Americans without fair dealings and with war and with aggression and violation makes them illegitimate countries. Someone could have this opinion without being anti-white. Why is it that no one can have this opinion about Israel without being anti-Semite? And confirmed by Elon, if someone objects to the legitimacy of Israel's existence as it stands, that is what Elon considers to be one of the greatest forms of anti-Semitism ever. I have 6 million. I have 6 million arguments to make against this statement by Elon Musk, but I will content myself with one for now. So it was overall a very disappointing, groveling and kneeling and carpeting of Elon, which summed up at the end. Actually, one of the most interesting speakers of this whole thing was Alan Dershowitz. So Alan Dershowitz came with a true defense of an American conception of free speech, despite being Jewish. And he didn't play really the Jewish card. He said, you know, I think we should go by the books of America and the First Amendment. And people should be allowed to have anything, and you can label them however you want, but you shouldn't interfere. And what Alan Dershowitz brought to Elon, I think Elon doesn't measure the importance of it. Because Alan Dershowitz has this very painful way to present it. He was presenting it as a circle of entitlement, of ism entitlement. That is not the right way to sell your stuff. When you call something an ism, you're already dismissing it, Alan. So that wasn't a good selling point, but Izaidi is very important. Izaidi goes as follows. If you define a certain sentence to be censorable, if you decide that, say, on Gab there's no porn, well, then there shouldn't be interracial porn, there shouldn't be white porn, and there shouldn't be black porn, and there shouldn't be Jewish porn. Same thing for speech. And when you do this, you'll realize that almost no one wants censorship when they realize that it's going to come back to them like a boomerang. So, one example. You know, there is currently an asymmetry in the gender policies of Twitter, of X. So it is considered, I mean, it's really on the borderline because at this point, Elon has been sending signals that maybe it is, maybe it is not. But it can certainly still be considered harassment in on X to say to someone that they're a female if they consider themselves to be a male. To say to someone who's a trans male, no, you're a woman. That can be considered harassment on X. But it cannot be considered harassment when they do that to me and they call me things that I don't identify as. I don't identify as a rapist. I get called a rapist on an everyday basis on X. So if you feel violated by being called a male or a woman when you identify to the opposite, imagine how I feel being called a rapist when I identify as a non-rapist. It's one of the foundational aspects of my identity. I'm super proud. All my life, I didn't feel the need to rape at all. I really feel like very early in my life, I felt like non-rapish. I felt like I didn't want to rape, and yet I get called a rapist every day on X by these leftists. How is it that you're offering a protection against what people don't identify as when it's gender, but not when it's rape? In fact, if anything, rape is a much graver accusation than you're a male or you're a woman. If anything, it's kind of mundane. What you consider someone else's sex to be. If you consider someone else has committed a rape and they haven't, then you're doing something much graver. And yet, I'm not protected. So what Alan Dershowitz is saying is, if you're going to protect one side with this, protect all of the other sides with all of their other claims. So, for example, you can make a circle around porn and you say, all porn is illegal. Well, then all porn is illegal, all of it, and we define the line, and that's the line for porn. You can say all invectives against someone's identity are illegal, but then that also means the leftists will be censored when they come and call me names that I don't identify as. They certainly will not want this. So by doing so, basically, you realize they will not want a single thing to be censored, because they will realize, oh, well, maybe I don't want these people to deny this historical event. But if I deny them that right, they will then deny me the right of denying my own historical events that I like to deny. So eventually you find yourself with no one really wants to censor anything. Dino Lagovic says, I accuse JF of pluming. Your Honor, I have plumed. I have plumed. But I have done so on pipes that were fully consenting. Chuck McBalls is on... Chuck McBalls is on Rumble, and he says, hi, JFG Tonight. The phrase Jewish porn is against our TOS. I will not report this infraction, but please be careful going forward. Is this guy real, or is... This is a platform open to all views and supportive of free speech. However, we do not condone activism that risks real-world violence to groups already at high risk. As such, we have made a blanket ban. Is this guy a troll on Rumble, or is he a true Rumble employee? This guy has zero videos on Rumble. How do I know Chuck McBalls? And given your name, how do I know that you are a real admin? Okay, people are reporting him as an imposter. End of the line, Joel says imposter. Cloud Warmer says no admin badge, not real. Okay. Chuck McBalls. I mean, with a nickname like this, what did I expect? What did I expect? Yeah, maybe it would be good to name a couple of admins, maybe, on... Can I name someone admin on the live chat? I don't know. Chuck McBalls sounds legit. So overall, it was kind of shocking to see how much in response to being called anti-Semitic, Elon is willing to kneel and say, no, no, look, I'm Jewish. I've went to Jewish school. I don't think it's a good thing that he felt that much obligation to kneel. For a billionaire like this, if anyone out there would have the liberty to say, I just won't care. I'm not going to give credence to the attack. Because every time you give credence, Elon, you might be able to get away with it by calling Ben Shapiro, calling your five rabbis, and arrange something that makes you look not anti-Semitic. But it's not a long-term solution. The long-term, because it's not available to the everyday guy that gets called anti-Semitic. The long-term solution is to make the Jews understand you're not going anymore to benefit from that special term that allows you to combine your political opposition and confound them with a psychiatric disorder. That is the attitude we have to do. And we're going to need at some point a billionaire with balls who says, I'm not going to respond. The ADL can say this. I'm not going to respond. because we should act like it's not important, this label, because it's been overused and it's been abused. As long as we don't have this, we haven't reached full victory. Now, I remain a fan of Elon and what he has done with X. I think that he has expanded the public conversation to a point where we can now make progress. We can now have a discussion and try pointing out some of the things that we object to in the policies of Israel or in whatever we were censored for. But the work remains ahead. This is what I realized from this live stream. The work remains ahead because a normie like Elon still feels the need to display just overly. And it's almost, it was almost sick, the level of, I'm Jewish, don't put me with the other group of anti-Semites. I'm Jewish. I've done everything right. And here I'm surrounded by Jews. You have to believe me. Cloud Warmer says, JF, consider that Rumble links are arguably more normie conservative friendly from a sharing perspective. They are familiar with that platform and probably are already on it. I am curious, do you know Raging Dissident? He's Canadian. I've seen his clips appearing lately. I had heard of him. I don't exactly remember what he's about, but yeah, I heard the name before. And Harmless says, he sends 25 LBC. He says, it's a shame Elon's grandfather, Josh Haldeman, died in a plane crash when Elon was 3. I'm surprised the rabbis did not shit on Josh Adelman. Okay, and you send me a New Yorker link. The world according to Elon Musk's grandfather. What happened to anti-Semitic rants before social media? So the New Yorker has this whole article about how, well, maybe we don't have direct statements that are anti-Semitic of Elon, but his grandfather has made some statements. Elon Musk is not responsible for the political opinions of his grandfather, who died when Musk was 3 years old, but Haldeman's legacy casts light on what social media does. The reason that most people don't know about Musk's grandfather's political writings is that in his lifetime, social media did not exist, and the writings of people like him were not therefore amplified by it. Indeed, they were very unlikely to circulate widely and are now quite rare. Still, they're not hard to find, which makes it unfortunate that Isaacson neither quotes from nor mentions them. Okay, well, tell us, what are the horrible quotes of the grandfather of Elon? Every day, the brainwashers repeat and emphasize the things they want us to believe. Is that anti-Semitic? Is that a horrible writing of the grandfather of Elon? Yes. It seems to be. As examples, the natives are ill-treated, underpaid, underprivileged. Separate development is wrong. Apartheid is unchristian. Everyday newspapers, magazines, commercial radio, newscaster, bioscopes, din this into the conscious and subconscious minds of the public. People who know it is 99% untrue, repeat these lies emphatically and emotionally. As John Gora says on Odyssey, no lies detected. Wow, the grandfather of Elon Musk was writing this in 1960 in South Africa. Well, what happened? What happened? Basically, the whites of South Africa have been oppressed, have been reduced in number, have been scared, have been murdered by by basically a genocide motivated by racial hatred of white people. So these words are actually pretty prescient. So what is the problem here? The New Yorker is presenting us as, see, back then there was no social media, so you wouldn't know about these statements, but he did it. Well, they are pretty pretty prescient statement, pretty brilliant statements. Haldeman railed against many dark forces that he believed to be propagating these ideas, blah, blah, blah. Well, okay, the facts of history show that the white man has always developed the country he inhabits to the benefit of all concerned. He wrote, peddling stock apartheid propaganda. And the black people of Africa have been in close contact with civilization from the earliest times, but on their own built nothing and discovered nothing, not even the wheel. Well, the New Yorker is just quoting these things and provide us with evidence that the claim is false. Where is it that the wheel was discovered in Africa? I would like to know. Just list the countries, list the dates, and we're going to assess whether it was independently discovered, what it was serving. Just don't just say, oh, these statements look, they look grave enough that I don't even need to comment on them. No, no, tell us, was the grandfather of Elon Musk wrong here? Was he making false statements? Rodericid says, is the New Yorker guilty of hate speech in Canada for quoting that? I mean, it's very, very weird. For now, there is no evidence that the Canadian law can be applied for people quoting and describing, racist statements, even if the statements I read above didn't sound like it would fall under the purview of the Canadian laws. So all in all, we found ourselves with a kneeling Elon. Keith Woods is currently on the Suleiman Hamed podcast with Gage, our friend Anthony. I don't know, he constantly changes his name, so I don't even know what's it. Lucas Gage, that's his name. So my writing on this while I was hearing it, this live stream, went as follows. Elon Musk admits going to Jewish school in South Africa. His name is a very Israeli name. His father took him to Israel when he was 13. He doesn't know if he is genetically Jewish. He says he is very Jewish adjacent. However, there is evidence that his mother is definitely Jewish, was coming from a Jewish family, and that it just so happens that Elon was raised as a Christian. But he is probably has a large component of ethnically Jewish genetics. Elon says it is ridiculous. They only have an on-off switch for advertiser safety settings. He believes there should be degrees of advertiser abilities in grades because he believes there are different degrees of advertiser willingness to be alongside contents of various kinds. That is a case I've been making before. I'm super glad that Elon believes this. Elon, you have to understand, this is built the way leftists wanted it. They wanted free thinkers of all stripes of the right to all be packed with the extreme terroristic content because they wanted the advertiser to basically have no choice but to say, oh yeah, I don't want to be beside this content. That was exactly the kind of blurry category that was allowing them to make less money go to right-wing creators and more money go to left-wing creators on YouTube. And if it's inside the heart of Twitter, also on Twitter. So you have to understand this is not just an oversight. It was designed that way by leftists because they wanted to manipulate these platforms and engineer these platforms so that they would drive people toward the left. Elon says his goal is to defend free speech to the maximal extent allowed under the law in the given country where the account is operating, but that is not even true by the standard of the US. Lots of speech defended by the First Amendment is leading to account bans. So we had a definite disconnection between Elon and reality in this live stream. Elon doesn't seem to realize that in the US, even anti-Semitic speech is legal. So you are not allowing anti-Semitic speech, which is protected under the First Amendment. So you're not pushing the boundaries of free speech to the legal limit. I'm not saying you should do that to the extreme at all times, but don't brag about doing it if you're not doing it at all. You're not even getting close to what the First Amendment allows on Twitter. The First Amendment even allows these kinds of indirect, the wish of death type of stuff. I mean, there are cases that have survived a First Amendment review where, because the wish of death wasn't directly meant to recruit murderers against the person, it passed the First Amendment test. So, no, you're not close to that at all. Then we had a bunch of rabbis who, you know, after Alan Dershowitz, that was the only good intervention in the whole thing, because he suggested fairness. Like, if you would ban a sentence in which anti-Semitism is present, you should also ban that sentence when it is said against a white person. That would be super interesting to see, because the left would realize just how much they have been demanding censorship. And then it would apply to them when they talk about white people. I don't think we'll get there. I think that Elon kind of drifted away and actually didn't really come back to Alan Dershowitz's suggestion on this. But I think it's the solution. If you want to do any censorship, it should be done the way Alan Dershowitz proposed. Then we had a bunch of rabbis and Jewish identitarians, basically, you know, praise the Jewish religion, the Hebrew Bible, the best-selling book of all time. I said, I need a fact check on that one. Because I'm guessing that to make this case that it's the best-selling book of all time, you have to include all of the exemplars that are actually sold through the Christian Bible. That I would believe. But even then, I mean, there's a lot of New Testaments being sold as a standalone New Testament. When I was young, I had a New Testament that I was carrying. New guy says, not sold, though. So you think the exemplars were sold, but they were not read? It's like they're buying just containers filled with these books. And yeah, so I'd be surprised that the Hebrew version of the Bible is truly the most sold book. The Christian Bible is probably much more popular. Anyways. But it was this kind of Jewish stuff that was, you felt an overdose, and Elon wasn't helping because he wasn't bringing any balance to it. And so I concluded by saying, I think I'm slowly getting cancer from listening to this, and so I'm afraid I have to announce that I will die of cancer soon. Let's go see our crowd on Rumble, because I've been mostly keeping the Odyssey chat up. So we have 73 watchers on Rumble. We have 127 on Odyssey. That's interesting. So we have a divided crowd, but it seems that the Rumble people aren't people that have reduced our numbers on Odyssey. So, and yet I know that the listeners on Rumble, I know that I recognize you guys. I know that you guys are usual Odyssey listeners. So somehow we are growing our audience through this shift. End of the line, Joel says, Jeff, will you be on Millennial Woes Millennial this year? Well, it's been a tradition. I think I'm the longest standing guest there. And honestly, the year that I'm not invited by Millennial Woes, my heart will be broken, because it's one of the things I'm very proud of, to to have remained in the public eye sufficiently that when I appear there, it's not one of the lowest audience numbers. You know, it's not the highest, but people appreciate my appearance there, and it's been a tradition every year. And I don't know of any other creator that has been there every year since I don't know if it was from the beginning, but at least from very early. End of the line, Joel says, you and Morgoth are usually the best. Aquano says, JF, what was your contention with the Full House podcast? It sounds like you ideologically agree with them, but dislike that they happen to say things illegal in Canada. Well, it's like it's not a contention. It's just, I'm like, I tell them, if I come to an interview and then there's one guy in that interview who starts making invectives and all. And so it's like, I'm telling the guys, look, guys, if you don't delete this guy from your podcast, I'm just going to hang up and I can't share your link. And it's like, I would love to share your link, but I can't share a link that's illegal in Canada. So they say, oh yeah, yeah, we're going to delete it. But they left too much of it. They still left too much of it after they deleted what they thought was the worst part. But it's like, no, you've not deleted enough. I had asked all of these other things to be deleted. And they said, oh, well, we're going to publish it that way anyway. And so it's like, okay, well, I can't publish the link to my appearance on your show, because you have some idiot who came in and added useless invectives and content that's illegal in Canada. And it's like, you invited me there. How is this idiot's opinion on some other subject that didn't relate at all to what I was talking about? How is this important for your audience? And at some point, it's like, yeah, I blocked them on Telegram, because if you're going to make my time, to waste my time, basically, if you're going to invite me to your podcast, but in a way that I can't even share my appearance with you to my crowd, because some idiot co-host of yours knows what he's doing and he's adding these violent comments that have nothing to do with what I'm talking about, then our relationship is useless. It's like, you're just wasting my time. And that's, so it's not a contention that I have. It's just, fuck them. They waste my time. Go away, says JF. I have the show opened on Odyssey and Rumble so that I can monitor both chats. The double streaming is bad for the environment. Okay, I'll be switching to Rumble one day. Tower of Bones says, I'm thinking of going to Rumble. For some reason, Odyssey never allowed me to add payment method. I can at least contribute more regularly there. But if someone is up for sending me $1 on Rumble, I'd like to test that super chats are available on there. And I don't know, it's my first day streaming there. Harmless says, I believe Elon Musk is more likely to have significant Jewish ancestry than Elon's mother. Erol opposed apartheid while calling her family racist, and he also had many Jewish business partners. Yes, Erol has the style of a Jew. You know, he's been in the minerals business with these gems and rubies and diamonds and whatever he was doing. He's been doing all this crazy international traveling stuff. He is a great appreciator of history. he is a fucking multi-generational woman, like in the sense of, what was it? He had sex with the daughter of his, I don't even remember. Something that wasn't illegal, but something that that is part of an expectation of behavior that I have, that is part of a signature in my view. So we've seen all this from Erol. End of the line, Joel says, Jeff, will you add your new streaming platform details to jfg.world? Sure, I'll do it at some point. All right. Elon Musk was right about Wikipedia. History is being rewritten by those with too much time on their hands. Here's Wikipedia trying to erase Yaroslav Hunka, whose presence in the Canadian Parliament embarrassed Justin Trudeau and the rest of his liberals. So they have put up this article about, you know, this is a guy who's making the news right now because he was applauded by the Canadian Parliament and he turned out to be a Nazi who had sworn allegiance to Hitler. It's hilarious that the whole debacle around this, because at first I saw the right wing on Twitter trying to offend themselves with this, like, oh my God, here they are clapping for a Nazi. Ah! And I was like, okay. Yeah, now Poland wants him deported. And so it's taking proportions that shouldn't have been possible. I was looking at this story early and I was like, you know, who cares? It's not going to lead to a big thing. It's once again one of these kind of right-wing attempt at boycotting in the style of the left, but it's not going to work because it's the right wing. But amazingly, everyone has been shamed for it. The Speaker of the House has been resigning for this. Justin Trudeau has made public apologies now for it. It is absolutely hilarious. And of course, the Wikipedia editors are at it. They are trying to delete the Wikipedia page of this guy. Absolutely ridiculous. This guy has become, if this guy's Wikipedia page may not have been justified before, it certainly is justified now. And it's a needed page because he has become a subject of current news. No matter what, there's going to need to be a page about him. So I find it amazing how this sensitivity around World War II and Nazis is still very very salient to our world. I think it's sad that it is. I think we should move on, and it shouldn't be a, you know, eggs that we have to walk on every time this subject comes. U.S. congressman slams SEC chair Gary Gensler for attacking crypto.
Do you believe the vast majority of digital assets meet the investment contract test and are therefore securities operating illegally outside of the U.S. regulatory umbrella?
As I've said, many of these assets are basically the public is anticipating
profits
based
yes?
on the efforts of others.
Is the answer then yes?
Again, without prejudging anyone, I do think that the significant
reclaiming
majority
my time.
Are
I'll take
investment
it as a yes.
contracts.
And to be clear, sir, this perspective has nothing to do with a concern you noted in a speech last year where you said, quote, over the past year, several bank executives have shared their concerns with me about the sheer number of depositors who have moved money from their bank accounts into crypto-related exchanges and wallets, end quote, right?
The concern that those bank executives raised was that there's
again, I'm reclaiming my time, sir.
Were getting
no,
hurt.
I've asked you to answer the questions as short as I can so I can use the time I have, and it's clear that you would like to avoid answering the questions, in my opinion. An Obama-appointed judge in the Southern District of New York, a bank-friendly jurisdiction where you bring most of your cases, recently found that decentralized financial technology, quote, not only removes the so-called middlemen from these transactions, but it also allows users to interact through a variety of methods in an easy and efficient manner, end quote. The court also said underwriters like the ones at banks where you work, sir, are, quote, precisely the types of individual roles that decentralized exchanges were designed to eliminate, end quote. Mr. Gensler, can you assure this committee that your style of regulation by harassment towards digital asset innovation is to the benefit of every American and not driven by your desires to protect industry incumbents?
This is a field that's rife with fraud.
Man, this guy, I love this guy. He's totally right. The whole history of blockade of financial innovation in the U.S., this guy totally represents the kind of bank vultures that are draining energy from the American economy and they won't let it go. And they know it's going to go if they let too much development in crypto show them to be ultimately a much less reliable option. So I'm super happy that there are at least some legislators who are going after this guy. In fact, we are learning that the government shutdown, if it happens, could fall with the deadline of some of the applications for Bitcoin ETF. And if that is the case, we could have a government shutdown that keeps Gary Gensler from shutting down these ETFs, and they would by default be accepted. So let's all pray for a government shutdown. This is one case where there's an exciting possibility that a government shutdown would force crypto, open crypto market in the United States. That is exciting. Jake Shields says 45% of men 18 to 25 have never approached a woman. Why are young men such cowards? It's not that difficult to walk up to a girl and introduce yourself. Well, that is complete bullshit by someone who doesn't know about this. But Pearl knows. She says because men face legal repercussions for interacting with women in every way. They are deciding the risk isn't worth the reward. Absolutely correct, Pearl. We had here a guy that I counseled, Shrigma Mail. Shrigma Mail has been going out there, has been trying to approach women, and he ended up having the police after him. The police was called by one of the women. One of the women started yelling at him, saying, "No, I don't want your advances." And all he was saying was approaching woman and saying, "Hey, I think you're cute. Do you want my phone number?" And just this led him to be expelled from the local university grounds, which were basically streets. They were public streets. And of course, it has no legal value. As I told him, he could go back. But he's going to get in trouble constantly like this. Like, they don't really care if there are no legal grounds to kick you off the street. But they try to intimidate you in doing so. And they try to spread rumors about you. So, yeah, you're going to get into all these troubles by approaching women. Our experimenter-in-chief has demonstrated it. 95-year-old Korean War veteran goes homeless after being evicted from New York nursing home to make space for illegal migrants. So yeah, there's no more space in New York. There's only space for illegal migrants because they get free benefits from the state. They get these free hotels. And yeah, we have Spindly Opinion. He sent us $1 on Rumble. Thank you so much, Spindly Opinion, because I'll be testing. So does this show in my account? How much of a fraction from this $1 will be taken by Rumble? So thank you for doing the experiment. That is exactly what I needed for tonight. It's amazing. So this is my first live stream, I believe, on Rumble, at least in the modern era of Rumble. And we already have Super Chats enabled. that is much better than YouTube already. So very good. This guy is amazing. If you want to see the coked up human mind, you want to go check out this BitBoy video. So BitBoy is this guy who was a leader of a crypto community, and he wasn't owning any of the stuff he was involved in terms of brands. And eventually his business associates have decided that he was too much on drugs, too unstable, and they kicked him out basically of their own organization. And I mean, amazingly, like 1 week after he's kicked out for emotional instability and various behaviors like cheating on his wife, being on drugs, being kind of harassing to people, he demonstrates what the problem is right here. I mean, this is what the human mind on cocaine looks like.
This is where Carlos lives, guys. I am live streaming from Carlos's house. Carlos has my Lamborghini right here in his garage. So today, guys, I'm going to be live streaming, and I'm going to be telling the entire story of Carlos Diaz, who Carlos Diaz is. I'm going to be talking about all the people he's affiliated with. I'm going to be talking about how he got into my building. I'm going to talk about all of it. Hope you guys are ready. This is he just answered the door, so I know this is him for sure, right here. I'm not scared of you, Carlos. I'm not scared. Guys, let me believe Carlos has made it all up. I don't think Mike Will Made It needs any hold that I needed to do in order to get my company back by Carlos. Not on that phone call, on a different phone call. All I had to do was walk back what I said about Justin Williams. Told me, okay? Which I hate to throw a Georgia dog under the bus, but he is a saint, so sorry, Charles. Okay. Charles Grant's been in our building filming stuff. I know he knows him, okay? Charles' house. I go knock on the door, and you know what he does? He turns and he runs because he's a pussy. He's on my side. Meanwhile, and look, let me talk about Altcoin Daily for a second, okay? Waters, you guys know Maxine Waters, the congresswoman from California. Now, I want to be very clear here. What Carlos told me is false. Cassie is trying to negotiate with Ben.eth, okay? You guys are good. Nothing to do with you. It's this guy. Thank you. So the point is what's occurring is very intimidating, okay? And he starts talking about all of the money that he's lost with Bitcoin. He told me that he bought $300,000 worth of Bitcoin for Percy Miller. That's Master P, okay? I know this is crazy, guys, okay? And then he tells them,
there's actually a change of the moment of the day. Like, it started all with the sun, and now we're at night. This guy is sieging the house of his ex-business partner. And eventually the police is called.
Hey, how's it going?
Stop. Oh, hey. Stop.
Oh, stop. I couldn't hear.
You have a weapon on you.
No, I do not.
Okay.
I do not.
So
I have one in my vehicle, but I do not have a weapon on me.
Okay. Do me a favor. Take out your whatever
fanny pack. Yeah, sorry. I reached too fast. I'm sorry.
That's fine. Take out your
sorry.
Backpack.
Okay.
Put your phone down.
Okay.
Put your phone down.
Okay. I'll put the phone down. Okay.
Put the phone.
All right. Okay. All right. Okay. Put the phone down.
Put the fanny pack down.
Okay.
What's going on?
And so we have then 20 minutes of the phone underground. And he's basically retelling the policeman the exact same coked up story of, hey, this is my Lamborghini in his garage. It's mine. I'm coming here to get it. I'm asking for him to give him my Lamborghini. And the police are like, well, you're not going to take the Lamborghini just like that. You can't go onto his... into his garage like this. And he's like, no, I had no intent of going illegally there and taking my Lamborghini. I'm just here to make a public case on my live stream that I'm owed a Lamborghini, and that is my Lamborghini. You should give it to me. Who knows whether there is a legal basis to this? I have no idea. I don't care. But it's such flow, stream of mind type of, you know, he keeps talking and there's always a new thing that he forgot to mention and he goes back to it. This guy has a totally disorganized mind. And he's like, I have a gun in my car, to the policeman. The police are like, is there someone in your car? And he says, yes, there's this girl, because she's involved with the business deal with this guy and the Lamborghini. So I brought her here. She's also my mistress. But my wife knows I'm with her. And my wife knows that we're here just for the business aspect. When you have to make so many parentheses, you know you have gone above the limit of the amount of cocaine that you should consume. Trump rages at deranged New York judge, corporate death penalty decision. That is something we had covered a couple of days ago, where Trump is being kept from any further business interactions in New York and his company. I don't know what it means. Does it mean his stuff is suddenly worth zero? Does it mean basically the New York state will be repossessing all of his buildings? I don't know how it works. Vivek Ramaswamy calls for the end of birthright citizenship. So there was the second Republican debate, one at which Trump has decided not to go also.
But I do go a step further. You're right about that, Ilya. I favor ending birthright citizenship for the kids of illegal immigrants in this country. Now, the left will howl about the Constitution and the 14th Amendment. The difference between me and them is I've actually read the 14th Amendment. What it says is that all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the laws and jurisdiction thereof are citizens. So nobody believes that the kid of a Mexican diplomat in this country enjoys birthright citizenship. Not a judge or legal scholar in this country will disagree with me on that. Well, if the kid of a Mexican diplomat doesn't enjoy birthright citizenship, then neither does the kid of an illegal migrant who broke the law to come here.
That is a good point. I had not thought about this, but to use the part where it says, and subject to the laws of this country, you could argue that the baby, physically born on place, is a citizen already of the country of his parents, and that therefore he was not a subject of the laws of this country ever. And I think it's a good point. And the comparison with the Mexican diplomat, that's a solid point also. You have to give it that we are currently giving more reverence to the rights of the illegal immigrant than we are to the right of the Mexican diplomat. That is a very interesting realization. So very good point again. I don't think Ramaswamy will have enough support to become the Republican candidate, but I think he did by far the best campaign. And he rose, last time we checked on the survey a couple of weeks ago, he was rising above DeSantis, and I think he should be the only choice. Ultimately, there's him and Trump that are interesting directions to go. And the rest is going back to some form of elitism in the Republican Party, which I wouldn't like to see. Pritzker, Illinois. Pritzker, Illinois, nation's worst state to own a home. Governor Pritzker promised to cut property taxes in 2020 as part of his State of the State speech, but he ended up not cutting them. And so because he didn't cut them, it is one of the worst places to own a home. Growth in real Illinois home values since 2000 are the worst in the nation. Look at this. Look at this, how just a public policy can totally make you lose on a housing bubble, because everyone knows that, hey, I don't want to keep any of this because I have to pay yearly fees to the state to basically keep my properties up. Very interesting. Some link got deleted. Ah, damn, why would you remove it? That was a good point. Well, someone, I don't know, someone self-deleted maybe his chat. Maybe. I don't think he got censored or anything. But yeah, so you can totally ruin your local housing market just because you are questioning whether it's property that is truly owned when you are adding taxes. Taxes, property taxes are nothing less than a leak of your property up to the point where you're not able to pay them. You will never guess what happened to the strong US consumer after today's huge GDP revisions. That will be our last news item for tonight. Yeah, so there was a sense that there was kind of a recovery of the expenses, but we have flattened back in terms of consumer spending. Actual economic release values, last price, and U.S. employees on non-farm payrolls. Those are measures, I guess, of the economic consumption activity. And really, there was a very short recovery after within the first quarter of 2023, and then we went back down. And in fact, there are revisions to this data. When you see the difference between the green and the blue line, it's the difference between the revision. So basically, we had an overestimated evaluation of consumption behavior. And most of these units back to 2022, quarter one of 2022, were reviewed toward the lows. After all, today's revision impacted all data from quarter one 2013. Therein, as the bard says, lies the rub. Wow, so it's been revised back to 2013. How did we get this? I mean, you're telling me that this was data that was illustrating consuming behavior from 2013, but that the real line turned out to be this? Revised, darker shade. Oh no, so the real line turned out to be this. Previously published, lighter shade. How does one make such a major error in the hundreds of billions of dollars? I don't know. I don't know how that happened. And the Philadelphia liquor stores are getting closed because they're getting looted so much that they can't keep up with the looting. I mean, they can't even restock the shop for the next looting, you know? So at this point, there's too much demand. It's a demand problem, really. There's too much demand for looting in Philadelphia. And so at this point, the 18 liquor stores have closed and they aren't giving sign of ever coming back, because at this point, you can't sell a bottle and then get 100 of them looted. It's not viable economically. That is it for tonight, boys. Thank you so much to all of you who have joined us on Rumble. Thank you so much for Spin the Opinion, who has tested our Super Chat feature, and to all of the other people supporting the show. Thank you so much on Subscribestar, Patreon, all of our platforms. The show is doing well. I will keep being able to speak freely up to the end of my life, thanks to you guys. And there may be great days ahead with Rumble. I don't know if we're going to do a full switch at some point, but how has it been going, people who watched us on Rumble? Is the quality there good? Was it more flowy than Odyssey? Did you experience a better night tonight on Rumble? I would like to see it, so report it in the live chat. People on Rumble were mentioning that Elon went at Eagle Pass. Yeah, so he went at some place of the border and he wants to film the situation at the border. That's kind of based. Why is this happening on the very same day where he goes to kneel to Jewish power? What's happening there? Is Elon trying to counterbalance any sort of kneeling to Jewish power with a with an equally based act on the other side. I don't know what is the idea of Elon there, but he is apparently at the border trying to film the border situation with his cell phone and live stream it on Twitter. I don't know where this will go. Nicholas Petris says, much better than Odyssey streaming from what I saw. Rumble is the better option. Worked perfect for me. Well, perhaps some of our audience on the Odyssey side would eventually want to try this this new platform, and perhaps we'll do a slow transfer. But Real Base Talk says Odyssey was okay tonight. Shamrock Shake says Odyssey was fine. Ladison says, Jeff, you remind me of my French-Canadian uncles who would say stuff like, what's that in the road? A head and a buck 380. Okay, well, maybe they used to say stuff like this. This is not stuff that I ever said. Thank you.